Chapter 54. Into the Palace. Seated on the tail end of the high-wheeled cart trundling up a twisty Tancheken street behind four sweating men, Elaine scowled through the grimy veil that covered her from eyes to chin, kicking her bare feet irritably. Every lurch over the paving stones jarred her to the top of her skull. The more she braced herself by holding on to the rough wooden planks of the cart bed, the worse it was. It did not seem to bother Nynaeve much. She jounced about like Elaine, but frowning slightly and eyes looking inward, she appeared hardly aware of it. And Egyanen, crowded against Nynaeve on the other side, veiled and with her dark hair in braids to her shoulders, rode each jolt easily, arms folded. Finally, Elaine emulated the Shan Chan woman. She could not avoid swaying into Nynaeve, but the ride no longer felt as if her lower teeth were going to be driven through the upper. She would have walked gladly, even barefoot, but Bael Domon had said it would not look right. People might wonder why women were not riding when there was plenty of room, and the last thing they wanted was anyone thinking about them twice. Of course, he was not being bounced about like a sack of turnips. He was walking, at the head of the cart, with 10 of the 20 sailors he had brought along for escort. More would seem suspicious, he claimed. She suspected he would not have had so many if not for her and the other two women. The cloudless sky still stretched gray overhead, though first light had crept on before they set out. The streets were still largely empty and silent except for the rumble of the cart and the creak of its axle. When the sun topped the horizon, people would begin to venture out, but now the few she saw were knots of men in baggy trousers and dark cylindrical caps, scuttling along with the furtive air of having been up to no good while dark had held. The old piece of canvas tossed over the cart's load was carefully arranged, so anyone could see it covered only 3 large baskets. Yet even so, one or another of those small clusters would pause like a pack of dogs, veiled faces all coming up together, eyes swiveling to follow the cart. Apparently, 20 men with boarding swords and cudgels were too many to face, because all eventually hurried on. The wheels dropped into a large hole where paving stones had been pried up in one of the riots. The cart fell away beneath her. She almost bit her tongue as she and the cart bed met again with a hard smack. Egyanen and her casual arm folding. Grabbing the edge of the cart bed, she frowned at the Shan Chan woman, and found her tight-lipped and holding on with both hands also.
"Not quite the same as standing on deck after all," Egyanen said with a shrug.
Nynaeve grimaced slightly and tried to edge away from the Shan Chan woman, though how she might manage it without climbing into Elaine's lap was difficult to see.
"I am going to speak to Master Bael Domon," she muttered meaningfully, just as if the cart had not been her suggestion in the first place. Another lurch clicked her teeth shut.
They all three wore drab brown wool, thin woven but coarse and not very clean, poor farm women's dresses like shapeless sacks compared with the clinging silks of Rendra's taste. Refugees from the countryside earning a meal as they could, that was what they were supposed to be. Egyanen's relief at her first sight of the dresses had been quite evident, and almost as strange as her presence on the cart. Elaine would not have thought the latter conceivable. There had been quite a lot of discussion, that was what the men called it, in the Chamber of Falling Blossoms, but she and Nynaeve had countered most of their fool objections and ignored the rest. The two of them had to enter the Panarch's palace and as soon as possible. That was when Domon had raised another objection, one not as silly as the rest.
"You can no go into the palace alone," the bearded smuggler muttered, staring at his fists on the table. "You say you will no channel unless you must, no to warn these black eyes Sedai."
Neither of them had seen any need to mention one of the Forsaken.
"Then you must have muscle to swing a club if the need do arise, and eyes to watch your backs will no be amiss either. I am known there to the servants. I did take gifts to the old Panarch, too. I will go with you."
Shaking his head, he growled,
"You do make me stretch my neck on the headsman's block because I did leave you at Falmouth. Fortune prick me if you do know. Well, it do be done now. You can no object to this. I will go in with you.
You are a fool, Ileana, Julin said contemptuously before she or Nynaeve could open their mouths. You think the Tarabonners will allow you to wander about the palace as you wish? A scruffy smuggler from Ilion. I know the ways of servants, how to duck my head and make some empty-headed noble think.
He cleared his throat hastily and hurried on without looking at Nynaeve or at her. I should be the one to go with them.
Tom laughed at the other two men. Do you think either of you could pass for a Tarabonner? I can. These will do in a pinch.
He knuckled his long mustaches.
Besides, you cannot run around the Panarch's palace carrying cudgel or staff. A more subtle method of protection is needed.
He flourished a hand, and a knife suddenly appeared, spinning through his fingers to vanish just as quickly. Up his sleeve, Elaine believed.
You all know what you have to do, Nynaeve snapped. And you cannot do it trying to watch over us like a pair of geese for market.
Taking a deep breath, she went on in a milder tone.
If there was a way one of you could come along, I'd appreciate the extra eyes, if nothing else, but it cannot be. We have to go alone, it seems, and that is all there is to it.
I can accompany you, Egyanin announced suddenly from where Nynaeve had made her stand in the corner of the room. Everybody turned to look at her. She frowned back as though not quite certain herself.
These women are dark friends. They should be brought to justice.
Elaine was simply startled at the offer, but Nynaeve, the corners of her mouth going white, looked ready to drub the woman for it.
You think we would trust you, Shan-Chan? She said coldly. Before we leave, you'll be locked securely in a storeroom, however much talk it—
I give my oath, by my hope of a higher name, Egyanin broke in, putting her hands over her heart, one atop the other, that I will not betray you in any way, that I will obey you and guard your backs until you are safely out of the Panarch's palace.
Then she bowed three times, deeply and formally. Elaine had no idea what hope of a higher name meant, but the Shan-Chan woman certainly made it sound binding.
She can do it, Domon said with slow reluctance.
He eyed Egyanin and shook his head.
Fortune prick me if there be more than two or three of my men I would wager on, coin for coin, against her.
Nynaeve frowned at her hand, gripping half a dozen of her long braids, then quite deliberately gave them a yank.
Nynaeve, Elaine told her firmly, you yourself said you would like another pair of eyes, and I definitely would. Besides which, if we are to do this without channeling, I would not mind having someone along who can handle a nosy guard if need be. I am not up to thumping men with my fists, and neither are you. You remember how she can fight.
Nynaeve glared at Egyanin, frowned at Elaine, and then stared at the men as if they had plotted this behind her back. At last, though, she nodded.
Good, Elaine said. Master Domon, that means three sets of dresses, not two. Now the three of you had best be off. We want to be on our way by daybreak.
The cart, jerking to a halt, brought Elaine out of her reverie. Dismounted white cloaks were questioning Domon. Here the street ran into a square behind the Panarch's palace, a much smaller square than the one in front. Beyond, the palace stood in piles of white marble, slender towers banded with lacy stonework, snowy domes capped with gold and topped by golden spires or weather vanes. The streets to either side were much wider than most in Tanchico and straighter. The slow clop-clop of a horse's hooves on the square's broad paving stones announced another rider, a tall man in burnished helmet, armor gleaming beneath his white cloak with its golden sunburst and crimson shepherd's crook. Elaine put her head down. The four knots of rank under the flaring sun told her this was J. Kim Carradin. The man had never seen her, but if he thought she was staring, he might wonder why. The hooves passed on along the square without pausing.
Egyanin had her face right down, too, but Nynaeve frowned openly after the Inquisitor. "That man is very worried about something," she murmured. "I hope he's not heard."
"The Panarch is dead," a man's voice shouted from somewhere across the square. "They've killed her."
There was no telling who had shouted or where. The streets Elaine could see were blocked by white cloaks on horses. Looking back down the street the cart had just climbed, she wished the guards would question Domon more quickly. People were gathering down at the first bend, milling about and peering up toward the square. It seemed Tom and Jewelin had made a good job of seeding their rumors during the night. Now, if only things did not erupt while they sat out here in the middle of it. If a riot started now... The only thing that kept her hands from shaking was her double grip on the cart bed. Light. A mob out here and the Black Aja inside. Maybe Mogadine. I'm so frightened my mouth is dry. Nynaeve and Elaine were watching the crowd growing down the street, too, and not even blinking, much less trembling. I will not be a coward. I will not. The cart rumbled forward, and she heaved a sigh of relief. It took her a moment to realize she had heard twin echoes from the other two women. Before gates not much wider than the cart, Domon was questioned again by men in pointed helmets, their breastplates embossed with a tree painted gold. Soldiers of the Panarch's Legion. The questions were shorter this time. Elaine thought she saw a small purse change hands, and then they were inside, rumbling across the rough-paved yard outside the kitchens. Except for Domon, the sailors remained out with the soldiers. Elaine hopped down as soon as the cart halted, working her bare feet on the paving. The uneven stones were hard. It was difficult to believe the thin sole of a slipper could make so much difference. Egyanin scrambled up into the cart to pass the baskets out, Nynaeve taking the first on her back, one hand twisted behind her underneath, the other over her shoulder to grip the rim. Long white peppers, a little wizened by their journey all the way from Saldaya, filled the baskets nearly to the top. As Elaine was taking hers, Domon came to the end of the cart and pretended to inspect the ice peppers. "The White Cloaks and the Panarch's Legion do be close to blows, it do appear," he murmured, fingering peppers. "That lieutenant did say the Legion could protect the Panarch themselves if most of the Legion had no been sent to the Ring Forts. Jakim Carradine do have access to the Panarch, but no the Lord Captain of the Legion. And they are no pleased that all the guards inside do be civil watch. A suspicious man might say someone do want the Panarch's guards to watch each other more than anything else."
"That is good to know," Nynaeve murmured without looking at him. "I've always said you can learn useful things listening to men's gossip."
Domon grunted sourly.
"I will take you inside. Then I must go back to my men to make sure they do no get caught up in the mob."
Every sailor from every ship Domon had in port was out in the streets around the palace. Hefting her own basket on her back, Elaine followed the other two women behind him, keeping her head down and wincing at every step until she was on the reddish-brown tiles of the kitchen. The smells of spices and cooking meat and sauces filled the room.
"Ice peppers for the Panarch," Domon announced. "A gift from Bale Domon, a good shipowner of this city." "More of the ice peppers," a stout, dark-braided woman in a white apron and the ever-present veil said, barely looking up from a silver tray where she was arranging an ornately folded white napkin among dishes of thin, golden seafolk porcelain. There were a dozen or more aproned women in the kitchen, as well as a pair of boys turning dripping roasts on spits in two of the six fireplaces, but clearly she was the chief cook.
"Well, the Panarch, she seems to have enjoyed the last. Into the storeroom there."
She gestured vaguely toward one of the doors on the far side of the room.
"I have no time to bother with you now."
Elaine kept her eyes on the floor as she trailed after Nynaeve and Egyanin, sweating, and not for the heat of the iron stoves and fireplaces.
A skinny woman in green silk, not of Tarabon cut, stood beside one of the wide tables, scratching the ears of a scrawny gray cat as it lapped cream from a porcelain dish. The cat named her, as well as her narrow face and wide nose, Marilyn Gamulfin, once of the brown Aja, now of the black. If she looked up from that cat, if she really became aware of them, there would be no need for channeling for her to know that two of them could. This close, the woman would be able to sense the ability itself. Sweat dripped from the end of Elaine's nose by the time she pushed the storeroom door shut behind her with a hip. "Did you see her?" she demanded in a low voice, letting her basket half fall to the floor. Fretwork carved through the plastered wall just under the ceiling let in dim light from the kitchen. Rows of tall shelves filled the floor of the large room, laden with sacks and net bags of vegetables and large jars of spice. Barrels and casks stood everywhere, and a dozen dressed lambs and twice as many geese hung on hooks. According to the sketchy floor plan Domon and Tom had drawn between them, this was the smallest storeroom for food in the palace. "This is disgusting," she said. "I know Rendra keeps a full kitchen, but at least she buys what she needs as she can. These people have been feasting while—" "Hold your concern until you can do something about it," Nynaeve told her in a sharp whisper. She had upended her basket on the floor and was stripping off her rough farm woman's dress. Egyanin was already down to her shift. "I did see her. If you want her to come in here to see what the noise is about, keep talking." Elaine sniffed, but let it pass. She had not been making that much noise. Pulling off her own dress, she dumped the peppers out of her basket and what had been hidden under them as well. Among other things, a dress of white, belted in green, fine-spun wool, embroidered above the left breast with a green tree of spreading branches atop the outline of a trefoil leaf. Her grimy veil was replaced by a clean one, of linen scraped nearly as sheer as silk. White slippers with padded soles were welcome on feet bruised by that walk from cart to kitchen. The Shanshan woman had been the first out of her old clothes, but she was the last into her white garment, muttering all the while about indecent and serving girl, which made no sense. The dresses were servants' dresses. The whole point was that servants could go anywhere, and a palace had too many for anyone to notice three more. And as for indecent, Elaine could remember being a touch hesitant about wearing the Tarabon style in public, but she had become used to it soon enough, and even this thin wool could not cling as silk did. Egyanin seemed to have very strict ideas of modesty. Eventually, though, the woman had done up her last lace and the farm clothes had been stuffed into the baskets and covered with ice peppers. Marilyn Gamulfin was gone from the kitchen, though the raggedy-eared gray cat still lapped cream on the table. Elaine and the other two started for the door that led deeper into the palace. One of the undercooks was frowning at the cat, fist on her ample hips. "I would like to strangle this cat," she muttered, pale brown braids swinging as she shook her head angrily. "It eats the cream, and because I put the drop of cream on the berries for my breakfast, I have the bread and water for my meals." "Count yourself lucky you are not out in the street or swinging from the gallows." The chief cook did not sound sympathetic. "If a lady says you have stolen, then you have stolen, even if it is the cream for her cats, yes?" "You, there!" Elaine and her companions froze at the shout. The dark braided woman shook a long wooden spoon at them. "You come into my kitchen and stroll about as in the garden, you lazy sows, you. You have come for the breakfast of the Lady Ispan, yes? If you do not have it there when she wakes, you will learn how to jump. Well?" She gestured at the silver tray she had been laboring over before, covered now with a snowy linen cloth. There was no way to speak. If any one of them opened her mouth, her first words would show her no Taraboner. Thinking quickly, Elaine bobbed a servant's curtsy and picked up the tray. A servant carrying something was going about her work, and not likely to be stopped or told to do something else. Lady Ispan? Not an uncommon name in Tarabon, but there was an Ispan on the list of black sisters.
"So you mock me, do you, you little cow, you?"
the stout woman roared, and started around the table, waving her thick wooden spoon threateningly. There was nothing to do without giving herself away, nothing but stay and be hit, or run. Elaine darted out of the kitchen with the tray, Nynaeve and Egyanin at her heels. The cook's shouts followed them, but not the cook, thankfully. An image of the three of them running through the palace pursued by the stout woman made Elaine want to giggle hysterically. Mock her? She was sure that had been exactly the same curtsy servants had given her thousands of times. More storerooms lined the narrow hallway leading away from the kitchen, and tall cupboards for brooms and mops, buckets and soaps, linens for tables, and all sorts of assorted things. Nynaeve found a fat feather duster in one. Egyanin took an armful of folded towels from another and a stout stone pestle out of a mortar in a third. She hid the pestle under the towels. "A cudgel is sometimes handy," she said, when Elaine raised an eyebrow, "especially when no one expects you to have it." Nynaeve sniffed but said nothing. She had hardly acknowledged Egyanin at all since agreeing to her presence. Deeper in the palace, the hallways broadened and heightened, the white walls carved with friezes and the ceilings set with gleaming arabesques of gold. Long, bright carpets ran along white-tiled floors. Ornate golden lamps on gilded stands gave light and the scent of perfumed oil. Sometimes the corridor opened into courtyards rounded by walks with slim, fluted columns, overlooked by balconies screened by filigreed stonework. Large fountains burbled. Fish, red and white and golden, swam beneath lily pads with huge white flowers, not at all like the city outside. Occasionally they saw other servants, men and women in white, tree and leaf embroidered on one shoulder, hurrying about their tasks, or men in the gray coats and steel caps of the civil watch carrying staffs or cudgels. No one spoke to them or even looked twice, not at three serving women, obviously, at their work. At last they came to the narrow servants' stairs marked on their sketchy map. "Remember," Nynaeve said quietly, "if there are guards on her door, leave. If she is not alone, leave. She is far from the most important reason we are here." She took a deep breath, making herself look at Egyanin. "If you let anything happen to her..." A trumpet sounded faintly from outside. A moment later, a gong rang inside and shouted orders drifted down the hall. Men in steel caps appeared for a moment down the hallway, running. "Maybe we will not have to worry about guards on her door," Elaine said. The riot had begun in the streets. Rumors spread by Tom and Julian to gather the crowd, Domon's sailors to egg them on. She regretted the necessity, but the disturbance would pull most of the guards out of the palace, maybe all with luck. Those people out there did not know it, but they fought in a battle to save their city from the Black Aja and the world from the Shadow. "Egyanin should go with you, Nynaeve. Your part is the most important. If one of us needs someone to watch her back, it is you."
"I've no need for a Shan Chan."
Shouldering her duster like a pike, Nynaeve strode off down the hall. She really did not move like a servant, not with that militant stride.
"Should we not be about our own task?" Egyanin said. "The riot will not hold attention completely for long."
Elaine nodded. Nynaeve had passed out of sight around a corner. The stairs were narrow and hidden in the wall to keep servants as unseen as possible. The corridors on the second floor were much as those on the first, except that double-pointed arches were almost as likely to give onto a stone-latticed balcony as onto a room. There seemed to be far fewer servants as they made their way to the west side of the palace, and none more than glanced at them. Wonderfully, the hallway outside the Panarch's apartments was empty. No guards in front of the wide, tree-carved doors set in a double-peaked frame. Not that she had meant to retreat had there been guards, no matter what she had told Nynaeve, but it did make things simpler. A moment later, she was not so sure. She could feel someone channeling in those rooms. Not strong flows,
but definitely the power being woven, or maybe a weave maintained. Few women knew the trick of tying a weave.
"What is the matter?" Egyanin asked. Elaine realized she had stopped.
"One of the Black Sisters is in there."
"One or more?"
"Only one channeling, certainly."
She pressed close to the doors.
"A woman was singing in there."
She put her ear to the carved wood, heard raucous words, muffled yet clearly understandable.
"My breasts are round and my hips are too. I can flatten a whole ship's crew."
Startled, she jerked back, porcelain dishes sliding on the tray under the cloth. Had she somehow come to the wrong room?
No, she had memorized the sketch. Besides, in the entire palace, the only doors carved with the tree led to the Panarch's apartments.
"Then we must leave her," Egyanin said.
"You can do nothing without warning the others of your presence."
"Perhaps I can. If they feel me channel, they will think it is whoever is in there."
Frowning, she bit her lower lip.
How many were there?
She could do at least 3 or 4 things at once with the power, something only Egwene and Nynaeve could match. She ran down a list of Andoran queens who had shown courage in the face of great danger, until she realized it was a list of all the queens of Andor.
"I will be queen one day. I can be as brave as they."
Readying herself, she said, "Throw open the doors, Egyanin, then drop down so I can see everything." The Shan Chan woman hesitated.
"Throw open the doors."
Elaine's own voice surprised her. She had not tried to make it anything, but it was quiet, calm, commanding. And Egyanin nodded, almost a bow, and immediately flung open both doors.
"My thighs are strong as anchor chain. My kiss can burst."
The dark-braided singer, standing wrapped in flows of air to her neck and a soiled, wrinkled Tarabonner gown of red silk, cut off short as the doors banged back. A frail-appearing woman, lounging in pale blue of a high-necked Kyrianan cut on a long padded bench, ceased nodding her head to the song and leaped to her feet, outrage replacing the grin on her fox-shaped face. The glow of Saidar already surrounded Tamile, but she did not have a chance. Appalled at what she saw, Elaine embraced the true source and lashed out hard with flows of air, webbing her from shoulders to ankles, wove a shield of spirit, and slammed it between the woman and the source. The glow around Tamile vanished, and she went flying across the bench as if she had been struck by a galloping horse, eyes rolling up into her head, to land unconscious on her back, 3 paces away on the green and gold carpet. The dark-braided woman gave a start as the flows around her winked out of existence, felt at herself in wondering disbelief as she stared from Tamile to Elaine and Egyanin. Tying off the weave holding Tamile, Elaine hurried into the room, eyes searching for others of the Black Aja. Behind her, Egyanin closed the doors after them. There did not seem to be anyone else.
"Was she alone?"
she demanded of the woman in red. "The Panarch," by Nynaeve's description.
Nynaeve had mentioned something about a song. "You are not with them?"
Amathera said hesitantly, dark eyes taking in their dresses.
"You are Aes Sedai also?"
She seemed willing to doubt that, despite the evidence of Tamile.
"But not with them?"
"Was she alone?" Elaine snapped, and Amathera gave a little jump.
"Yes, alone. Yes, she..."
The Panarch grimaced.
"The others made me sit on my throne and speak the words they put into my mouth. It amused them to make me sometimes give justice and sometimes pronouncements of horrible injustice, rulings that will cause strife for generations if I cannot put them aright. But her,"
that full-lipped little mouth opened in a snarl,
"her they set to watch over me. She hurts me for no reason except to make me weep. She made me eat an entire trayful of white ice peppers and would not let me drink a drop until I begged on my knees while she laughed. In my dreams, she hoists me to the top of the Tower of Mourning by my ankles and lets me fall.
A dream, but it seems real, and each time she lets me fall screaming a little nearer the ground. And she laughs. She makes me learn lewd dances and filthy songs, and laughs when she tells me that before they leave she will make me sing and dance to entertain the— With a shriek, like a pouncing cat, she threw herself across the bench onto the bound woman, slapping wildly, pummeling with her fists. Egyanin, arms folded in front of the door, seemed ready to let it go on, but Elaine wove flows of air around Amathera's waist. To her surprise, she was able to lift her off the already senseless woman and set her on her feet. Perhaps learning how to handle those heavy weavings from Jorin had increased her strength. Amathera kicked at Tamil, turning her glare on Elaine and Egyanin when her slippered feet missed. "I am the Panarch of Tarabon, and I mean to dispense justice to this woman." That rosebud mouth had a very sulky look. Had the woman no sense of herself, of her position? She was equal to the king, a ruler. "And I am the Aes Sedai who has come to rescue you," Elaine said coolly. Realizing she still held the tray, she set it on the floor hurriedly. The woman seemed to be having enough trouble seeing beyond the white servants' dresses without that. Tamile's face was quite red. She would wake to bruises, no doubt fewer than she deserved. Elaine wished there was a way to take Tamile with them, a way to bring even one to justice in the tower. "We have come, at considerable risk, to take you out of here. Then you can reach the Lord Captain of the Panarch's Legion and Andric and his army, and you can chase these women out. Perhaps we will be lucky enough to take some of them for trial. But first we must get you away from them." "I do not need Andric," Amathera muttered. Elaine would have sworn she almost said, "Now." "There are soldiers of my legion around the palace. I know this. I have been allowed to speak to none of them, but once they see me and hear my voice, they will do what must be done, yes? You Aes Sedai cannot use the one power to harm—" She trailed off, scowling at the unconscious Tamile. "You cannot use it as a weapon, at least, yes? I know this." Elaine surprised herself by weaving tiny flows of air, one to each of Amathera's braids. The braids lifted straight up into the air, and the pouty-mouth fool had no choice but to follow them up on tiptoe. Elaine walked her that way on tiptoe until the woman stood right in front of her, dark eyes wide and indignant. "You will listen to me, Panarch Amathera of Tarabon," she said in icy tones. "If you try to walk out to your soldiers, Tamile's cronies may very well tie you up in a bundle and hand you back to her. Worse, they will learn that my friends and I are here, and that I will not allow. We are going to creep out of here, and if you will not agree to that, I'll bind and gag you and leave you beside Tamile for her friends to find." There had to be some way to take Tamile, too. "Do you understand me?" Amathera nodded slightly, held up as she was. Egyanin made an approving sound. Elaine loosed the flows. The woman's heels dropped to the carpet. "Now let's see if we can find you something to wear that is suitable for sneaking." Amathera nodded again, but her mouth was set at its sulkiest. Elaine hoped Nynaeve was having an easier time of it. Nynaeve entered the great exhibition hall with its multitude of thin columns, feather duster already moving. This collection must always need dusting, and surely no one would look twice at a woman doing what was needed. She looked around, eyes drawn to wired-together bones that looked like a long-legged horse with a neck that pushed its skull up 20 feet. The vast chamber stretched emptily in all directions. But someone could come in at any moment, servants who actually had been sent to clean, or Leandrin and all of her fellows come to search. Still holding the duster prominently, just in case, she hurried down to the white stone pedestal that had held the dull black collar and bracelets. She did not realize she had been holding her breath until she exhaled on seeing the things still there. The glass-sided table holding the Quaendiyar seal lay another 50 paces on, but this came first.
Climbing over the wrist-thick white silk rope, she touched the wide, jointed collar. Suffering, agony, woe. They rolled through her. She wanted to weep. What kind of thing could absorb all that pain? Pulling her hand back, she glared at the black metal, meant to control a man who could channel. Leandrin and her black sisters meant to use it to control Rand, turn him to the shadow, force him to serve the Dark One. Someone from her village, controlled and used by Aes Sedai. Black Aja, but Aes Sedai as surely as Moiraine with her scheming. Egyanin, making me like a filthy Shanchan. The sudden incongruity of the last thought hit her. Abruptly, she realized she was deliberately making herself angry, angry enough to channel. She embraced the source, the power filled her, and a serving woman with the tree and leaf on her shoulder entered the columned hall. Quivering with the urge to channel, Nynaeve waited, even lifting the duster, running the feathers over the collar and bracelets. The serving woman started down the pale floor stones. She would go in a moment, and Nynaeve could... What? Slip the things into her belt pouch and take them, but... The serving woman would go? Why did I think she'll leave instead of staying to work? She glanced sideways up the room at the woman coming toward her. Of course. No broom or mop. No feather duster. Not even a rag. Whatever she's here for, it cannot take long... Suddenly she saw the woman's face clearly. Sturdily handsome, framed by dark braids, smiling in an almost friendly fashion but not really paying her any mind, certainly not threatening in any way. Not quite the same face, but she knew it. Before thought, she struck out, weaving a hammer-hard flow of air to smash that face. In an instant, the glow of Saidar surrounded the other woman. Her features changed, somehow more regal now. Prouder, Mogadine's face remembered, and startled as well, surprised that she had not approached unsuspected, and Nynaeve's flow was sliced razor clean. She staggered under the whiplash recoil, like a physical blow, and the Forsaken struck with a complex weave of spirit streaked by water and air. Nynaeve had no idea what it was meant to do. Frantically, she tried to cut it as she had seen the other woman do, with a keen-edged weave of spirit. For a heartbeat she felt love, devotion, worship for the magnificent woman who would deign to allow her to... The intricate weave parted, and Mogadine missed a step. A tinge remained in Nynaeve's mind, like a fresh memory of wanting to obey, to grovel and please, what had happened at their first meeting all over again. It heated her rage. The knife-sharp shield that Egwene had used to still Amiko Nagoyan sprang into being, more weapon than shield, lashed at Mogadine, and was blocked, woven spirit straining against woven spirit, just short of severing Mogadine from the source forever. Again the Forsaken's counterblow came, slashing like an axe, intended to cut Nynaeve off in the same way, forever. Desperately, Nynaeve blocked it. Suddenly she realized that under her anger she was terrified. Holding off the other woman's attempt to still her while trying to do the same to her took everything she had. The power boiled in her till she thought she must burst. Her knees quivered with the effort of standing, and all went into those two things. She could not spare enough to light a candle. Mogadine's axe of spirit waxed and waned in sharpness, but that would not matter if the woman managed to drive it home. Nynaeve could not see any real difference in outcome between being stilled by the woman and merely being shielded and at her mercy. The thing brushed against the flow of power from the source into her, like a knife hovering over a chicken's stretched neck. The image was all too apt. She wished she had not thought of it. In the back of her mind, a tiny voice gibbered at her. Oh, light, don't let her, light, please, not that. For a moment she considered letting go her own attempt to cut Mogadine off. For one thing, she had to keep forcing it back to a razor edge. The woven flows did not want to hold the keenness. Letting go and using that strength to force Mogadine's attack further back, maybe sever it. But if she tried, the other woman would not need to defend. She could add that strength to her own attack. and she was one of the Forsaken, not just a black sister, a woman who had been Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends, when Aes Sedai had been able to do things undreamed of now. If Mogadine threw her whole strength at her. A man who came in then, or any woman unable to channel, would have seen only two women facing each other across the white silk rope from a distance of less than 10 feet. Two women staring at one another in a vast hall full of strange things. They would have seen nothing to say it was a duel. No leaping about and hacking with swords, as men would do, nothing smashed or broken. Just two women standing there, but a duel all the same, and maybe to the death, against one of the Forsaken.
"All my careful planning ruined," Mogadine said abruptly in a tight, angry voice, white-knuckled hands gripping her skirts. "At the very least, I shall have to go to untold effort to put everything back as it was. It may not be possible. Oh, I do mean to make you pay for that, Nynaeve Almira. This has been such a cozy hiding place, and those blind women have a number of very useful items in their possession, even if they do not—" She shook her head, lips peeling back to bare her teeth in a snarl. "I think I will take you with me this time. I know. I shall keep you for a live mounting block. You will be brought out to kneel on all fours so I can step from your back to my saddle. Or perhaps I shall give you to Ravine. He always repays favors. He does have a pretty little queen to amuse him now, but pretty women were always Ravine's weakness. He likes to have two or three or four at once dancing attendance on him. How will you like that? To spend the rest of your life competing for Ravine's favors? You will want to, once he has his hands on you. He has his little tricks. Yes, I do believe Ravine shall have you." Anger welled up in Nynaeve. Sweat streamed down her face, and her legs shook as if they might give way, but anger gave her strength. Furious, she managed to push her weapon of spirit a hair closer to severing Mogadine from the source before the woman halted it again. "So you discovered that little gem behind you," Mogadine said in a moment of precarious balance. Surprisingly, her voice was almost conversational. "I wonder how you did that. It does not matter. Did you come to take it away? Perhaps to destroy it? You cannot destroy it. That is not metal, but a form of Quaendiyar. Even balefire cannot destroy Quaendiyar. And if you mean to use it, it does have drawbacks, shall we say? Put the collar on a man who channels, and a woman wearing the bracelets can make him do whatever she wishes, true, but it will not stop him going mad, and there is a flow the other way, too. Eventually he will begin to be able to control you, too, so you end with a struggle at every hour. Not very palatable when he is going mad. Of course you can pass the bracelets around so no one has too much exposure, but that does mean trusting someone else with him. Men are always so good at violence. They make wonderful weapons. Or two women can each wear one bracelet, if you have someone you trust enough. That slows the seepage considerably, I understand, but it also lessens your control, even if you work in perfect unison. Eventually, you will find yourselves in a struggle for control with him, each of you needing him to remove your bracelet as surely as he needs you to remove the collar." She tilted her head, lifted a quizzical eyebrow. "You are following this, I trust? Controlling Luz Theron, Randall Thor, as he is called now, would be most useful, but is it worth the price? You can see why I have left the collar and bracelets where they are." Trembling to contain the power, to hold her woven flows, Nynaeve frowned. Why was the woman telling her all of this? Did she think it did not matter because she was going to win? Why her sudden change from rage to talk? There was sweat on Mogadine's face, too. Quite a lot of sweat, beading on her broad forehead, running down her cheeks. Suddenly, everything changed in Nynaeve's mind. Mogadine's was not a voice tight with anger. It was a voice tight with strain. Mogadine was not suddenly going to hurl all of her strength at her. She already was. The woman was putting out as much effort as she. She was facing one of the Forsaken,
and far from being plucked like a goose for supper, she had not lost a feather. She was meeting one of the Forsaken, strength for strength. Mogadine was trying to distract her, to gain an opening before her own strength gave out. If only she could do the same before her strength went. "Do you wonder how I know all this? The collar and bracelets were made after I was... Well, we will not talk of that. Once I was free, the first thing I did was seek information about those last days, last years, really. There are a good many fragments here and there that make no sense to anyone who does not have some idea to begin with. The Age of Legends. Such a quaint name you have given my time, yet even your wildest tales no more than hint at the half. I had lived over 200 years when the boar was opened, and I was still young for an Aes Sedai. Your legends are but pale imitations of what we could do. Why—" Nynaeve stopped listening. A way to distract the woman. Even if she could think of something to say, Mogadine would be on her guard against the method she herself was using. She could not spare effort for as much as a thread-thin weave, any more than Mogadine could. A woman from the Age of Legends, a woman long used to wielding the one power, perhaps used to doing almost everything with the power before she was imprisoned. In hiding since being freed, how used to doing things without the power had she become? Nynaeve let her legs sag. Dropping the feather duster, she caught hold of the pedestal to support herself. There was very little fakery needed. Morgadine smiled and took a step nearer. "Travel to other worlds, even worlds in the sky. Do you know that the stars are—" So sure, that smile, so triumphant. Nynaeve seized the collar, ignoring the joltingly pained emotions that spilled into her, and hurled it, all in one motion. The Forsaken had only begun to gape when the wide black circlet struck her between the eyes. Not a hard blow, certainly not enough to stun, but not expected either. Mogadine's control over her woven flows faltered, just slightly, only for an instant. Yet for that instant the balance between them shifted. The shield of spirit slid between Mogadine and the source. The halo surrounding her winked out. The woman's eyes bulged. Nynaeve expected her to leap for her throat. That was what she would have done. Instead, Mogadine jerked her skirts to her knees and ran. With no need to defend herself, it took only a little effort for Nynaeve to weave air around the fleeing woman. The Forsaken froze in mid-stride. Hurriedly, Nynaeve tied her weaving. She had done it. "I faced one of the Forsaken and beat her," she thought incredulously. Looking at the woman held from the neck down by air with the consistency of stone, even seeing her lean forward on one foot, it was hard to believe. Examining what she had done, she saw it had not been as complete a victory as she had wanted. The shield had blurred its sharp edge before it slid home. Mogadine was captured and shielded, but not stilled. Trying not to totter, she walked around in front of the other woman. Mogadine still looked queenly, but like a very frightened queen, licking her lips, eyes darting wildly. If you free me, we can come to some arrangement. There is much I can teach you. Ruthlessly, Nynaeve cut her off, weaving a gag of air that held the woman's jaws gaping. "A live mounting block. Wasn't that what you said? I think that is a very good idea. I like to ride." She smiled at the woman, whose eyes looked to be coming out of her head. Mounting block indeed. Once Mogadine had been put on trial in the tower and stilled, there could be no doubt of the sentence for one of the Forsaken. She would surely be put to some useful work in kitchens or gardens or stables, except when she was brought out to show that even the Forsaken could not escape justice, and treated no differently from any other servant beyond being watched. But let her think Nynaeve was as cruel as she. Let her think it until she was actually put on... Nynaeve's mouth twisted. Mogadine was not going to be put on trial. Not now, anyway. Not unless she could figure out some way to get her out of the Panarch's palace.
The woman seemed to believe the grimace portended something ill for her. Tears leaked from her eyes, and her mouth worked, trying to force words past the gag. Disgusted with herself, Nynaeve walked unsteadily back to where the black collar lay, stuffing it quickly into her belt pouch before the stark emotions in it could do more than touch her. The bracelets followed, with the same feelings of suffering and sorrow. I was ready to torture her by letting her think I would. She deserves it, surely, but that is not me. Or is it? Am I no better than Egyanen? She jerked around, furious that she could even consider such a question, and stalked past Mogadine to the glass-walled table. There had to be some way to bring the woman to justice. There were 7 figurines in the case. 7. And no seal. For a moment she could only stare. One of the figures, an odd animal shaped roughly like a pig but with a large round snout and feet as wide as its thick legs, stood where the seal had in the center of the table. Suddenly her eyes narrowed. It was not really there. The thing was woven from air and fire in flows so minute they made cobwebs seem cables. Even concentrating, she could barely see them. She doubted if Leandrin or any of the other black sisters could have. A tiny, slicing flick of the power, and the fat animal vanished, in its place the black and white seal on its red lacquered stand. Mogadine, the hider, had hidden it in plain sight. Fire melted a hole in the glass, and the seal went into her pouch, too. It bulged now and pulled her belt down. Frowning at the woman poised on the toe of one slipper, she tried to think of some means of taking her as well. But Mogadine would not fit in her pouch, and she rather thought that even if she could pick the other woman up, the sight might raise a few eyebrows. Still, as she made her way to the nearest arched doorway, she could not help looking back every other step. If only there was some way. Pausing for one last regretful look from the doorway, she turned to go. This door opened onto a courtyard with a fountain full of lily pads. On the other side of the fountain, a slim, coppery-skinned woman in a pale cream tarabonner dress that would have made Rendra blush was just raising a fluted black rod a pace in length. Nynaeve recognized Gianna Kaida. More, she recognized the rod. Desperately, she flung herself to one side, so hard that she slid along the smooth white floorstones until one of the thin columns stopped her with a jar. A leg-thick bar of white shot through where she had been standing, as if the air had turned to molten metal, slicing all the way across the exhibition hall. Where it struck, pieces simply vanished out of columns, priceless artifacts ceased to exist. Hurling flows of fire behind her blindly, hoping to strike something, anything, in the courtyard, Nynaeve scrambled away across the hall on hands and knees. Little more than waist-high, the bar sawed sideways, carving a swath through both walls. Between, cases and cabinets and wired skeletons collapsed and crashed. Severed columns quivered, some fell, but what dropped onto that terrible sword did not survive to smash displays and pedestals to the floor. The glass-walled table fell before the molten shaft vanished, leaving a purplish bar that seemed burned into Nynaeve's vision. The Quaendiyar figures were all that dropped out of that molten white shaft, bouncing on the floor. The figurines did not break, of course. It seemed Mogadine was right. Not even balefire could destroy Quaendiyar. That black rod was one of the stolen Turangreal. Nynaeve could remember the warning appended to their list in a firm hand. Produces balefire, dangerous and almost impossible to control. Mogadine seemed to be trying to scream through her invisible gag, head whipping back and forth in a frenzy as she fought her bonds of air, but Nynaeve spared her no more than a glance. As soon as the balefire disappeared, she raised herself up enough to peer back across the hall through the rent sawed along the chamber wall. Beside the fountain, Gianna Kaida was swaying, one hand to her head, the black rod almost falling from the other. But before Nynaeve could strike at her, she had clutched the fluted rod again. Balefire burst from its end, destroying everything in its path through the chamber. Dropping almost to her belly, Nynaeve crawled the other way as fast as she could, amid the crash and clatter of falling columns and masonry. Panting, she pulled herself into a corridor slashed through both walls. There was no telling how far the balefire had sliced. All the way out of the palace, perhaps. Twisting about on a carpet littered with bits of stone, she peeked cautiously around the side of the doorframe. The balefire had gone again. Silence held in the ruined exhibition hall, except when a weakened piece of stonework gave way and smashed to the rubble-strewn floor. There was no sign of Gianna Kaida, though enough of the far wall had fallen to show the fountained courtyard clearly. She was not about to risk going to see if the Turangrial had killed the woman in using it. Her breath came raggedly, and her arms and legs trembled enough that she was glad to lie there a moment. Channeling took energy the same as any other work. The more you did, the more energy. And the wearier you were, the less you could channel. She was not entirely certain she herself was up to facing even a weakened Gianna Kaida right then. Such a fool she had been, battling Mogadine with the power and never thinking that channeling that strong would have every black sister in the palace jumping out of her skin. She was lucky the Damani woman had not arrived with her Turangrial while she was still absorbed with the Forsaken. They very likely both would have died before they knew she was there. Suddenly she stared in disbelief. Mogadine was gone. The balefire had not come nearer than 10 feet from where she had stood, but she was not there any longer. It was impossible. She had been shielded. "How do I know what's impossible?" Nynaeve muttered. "It was impossible for me to beat one of the Forsaken, but I did it." Still no sign of Gianna Kaida. Pushing herself to her feet, she hurried for the appointed meeting place. If only Egwene had not run into any trouble, they might make it out of here safely after all.